what you need to know for every game to make your best bets. Will you fade or will you follow? Welcome to the Weekly Wager. Broadcasting live from the Pottawatomie Sportsbook Studios in Milwaukee, alongside Josh DiMaggio, here's Ben Brust.
It is the Weekly Wager live from Pottawatomie Casino Hotel and their wonderful sportsbook. I'm Ben Brust alongside Josh DiMaggio. A lot to get to today. And, you know, for Josh's sake, I'd say he has a decent amount of input. His voice is heard on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Morning 7-9 on 94.5 ESPN. He then has a bigger opportunity to hear his have his voice heard on Mr. Irrelevant on YouTube Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. But I think it's a good time for Josh and I, after 3 days of hearing everyone across ESPN Wisconsin reacting to the Packers and Cowboys tie, to react together. 800-990-3776 is the Carbless Talk and Text Line if you want to join our conversation. We're on YouTube at ESPN Milwaukee. You know, there's something you put in here right away that I want to get to on the back half of this. But on the front end, I want to know. Pie chart of blame, an old Scalzone Brust staple.
A classic.
Which I think fits perfectly reacting to the end of the game debacle specifically. I don't want to do pie chart of blame overall for the tie. The Packers have the ball.
Uh-huh.
They're down three. They know what their scenario is. They end up with a tie. In order to win, who would you, if your goal was to win the game, who do you put the pie chart of blame to?
I'm 95%, because there's really only two people I think are worthy of blame. I'm 95% Matt LaFleur, 5% Jordan Love. Matt LaFleur, in that situation, has to be communicating to his team either via hand signal, either in the timeout that they had, or the play calls into Jordan Love's ear. Matt LaFleur gave a long explanation in an interaction with Jason Wilde that he basically said, you know, we had the car crash comments, but as part of that, he was saying, after Romeo Doubs made the catch, we were supposed to be in 2-minute drill, which is different than no huddle. 2-minute is we got to get up to the line and get every playoff we can here in time to get down and to score, potentially score a touchdown. My belief is, after hearing the way Matt LaFleur's talked, is he, one, either did not know that a touchdown would win and end the game, or two, and I don't know if it's worse, better or worse, he thought, we're lucky to get out of here with a tie, so let's just tie the game and not give them a chance to get the ball back and to kick a field goal. One of those two options seem like the most logical to me at this point, and to me that's embarrassing, regardless of which the answer is.
Yeah, my pie chart of blame is going to incorporate one more person just from what the TV showed me. So I'd say 65% of the blame goes to Matt LaFleur. 30% of the blame goes to Jordan Love, and 5% of the blame goes to Rich Bisaccia.
Yes.
He was standing next to Matt LaFleur.
That's so good.
As 24 seconds were left on the clock, talking to each other in between an area where they were.
That's his assistant head coach.
Yeah,
the guy who's helping him with
associate
all his
head coach, and he's raved about him in terms of being a sounding board and being someone he can lean and talk to. But ultimately, where my frustration for that end of game goes to is when you get a first down on the 4th and 6, which is why you kick so you can see what your scenario is, there is about 3:30, 3:40 left on the clock. And you had a timeout and a 2-minute warning.
Yeah.
At some point between the timeout and the 2-minute warning, there has to be a conversation that echoes amongst the entire offense.
Right.
Whoever's coming in, coming out, if anyone's coming in, coming out, because you are in a 2-minute situation once you got to the 2-minute drill, of what the expectations were. And I keep hearing him say ozone, end zone or out of bounds.
Yes.
Well, the play calls were...
He called multiple runs.
Correct!
Yes.
Correct!
He was trying to bleed the clock. That much I know for a fact.
So, it like, something's not matching up in terms of
yes.
what he's saying and what was put on film and what we saw on Sunday. So,
yes.
That's why the majority to me goes to Matt LaFleur, hands
correct.
Down.
I do think Jordan Love is not totally... without blame here, because he is the starting quarterback. He is
like, you have to have a mind. You have to have a presence as QB1 to say, this is what we need to do. Let's go.
There is a piece of me, and I haven't heard anyone say it or get any sort of confirmation, but does it not feel like Matt LaFleur told them to sort of take their time? Yes, be in no huddle, but we don't need to be leaving a bunch of time on the play clock every time.
Actions speak louder than words. Right. I mean, the actions would say yes.
Right. They were going
slow. It
felt
like that.
And they were huddling up, and they were doing, like, that's not your typical, because there is a four-minute drill as well as a two-minute drill. Like, they plan for all these scenarios, and these scenarios are all thought out. They practice them. Probably the two-minute drill every single week, multiple times. And then the four-minute is also a situation that they're prepared for. And what I'm having trouble understanding is it simply it wasn't communicated that, yes, we're trying to bleed the clock here a little bit? Because right now, in Matt LaFleur's defense, we don't feel good about our kickoff team.
Anything with special teams except punt right now.
Right. So we are worried about a situation where we go too fast, we end up having to kick a field goal and give them the ball back, and they'll probably get the ball out to the 50, and then that's a few plays and Brandon Aubrey's in a situation. That I understand, because you can't trust the defense on Sunday, and you can't trust the special teams ever. So there is a little bit of gamesmanship there. But once you get into the two-minute, you're on their side of the field. You're in plus territory.
Like, they didn't use the middle of the field at all. Like any 15-yard pass to get you in the middle, hurry, spike.
Right.
Like, then you get some more time to regather and talk to them right away. Like, here,
yes.
like we're still hurry, and then give them the play. Like, you get a limited amount of time in the headset. And to act as if, like, there wasn't any time for him to continue to communicate with Jordan Love is just awful.
Right, and you can say whatever you want about it. You can believe, however, you can be not as against Matt LaFleur or not think that something that they're unwilling to admit was happening. But Matt LaFleur failed to communicate even with a two-minute drill. So in that spot, you could say, hey, for our first down here, we got to go. And you communicate that to all 11 members of the offense. And then he has multiple stops before the final timeout to have the opportunity to be like, hey, guys, I've watched the past few plays. We don't have an urgency about us. And at no point, given multiple opportunities, that ever happened. And that's the reason why the Green Bay Packers are now tied with the Dallas Cowboys.
Ben Bruss, Josh DiMaggio sat here after week one and week two looking at the Browns and the Cowboys and looked at those Super Bowl odds, and we were thinking to ourselves, interesting, they're at like 550. I think with their upcoming schedule, it's safe to say those odds are going to be hovering right around there, and there wouldn't be high variance. Well, there's some high variance now, because the Super Bowl odds are the Bills plus 400, the Eagles plus 650, the Lions have jumped the Packers in Super Bowl odds, and the Packers are plus 850. A $300 swing in which if you believe... And I think before we answer the question I'm about to ask, let's go to evaluating this team through 4 weeks and reevaluating if anything changes from week one to two about your overall feelings of this team.
I think this is still a good football team. I still think this team is capable of winning a Super Bowl. And I don't think that any team that has better odds than them has proven themselves to be far and away, like, much better and have things going the right direction. There are certainly, you look at the Eagles, you look at the Lions, and then you look at the Bills, and you go, yeah, those are good teams, and they've had a better season thus far than the Packers. But it's not like it's gangbusters.
No, there's not a huge gap still.
Right.
The only one I can make a case for is the Bills.
Yes, correct.
The Eagles, they've been down and came back. They've been up and let guys, the Buccaneers back, and in which if Baker Mayfield doesn't throw a horrible interception, they're still in that game and have a chance to win. They've been finding ways to win, but it hasn't been uberly impressive.
Nope.
The Lions, you have to take into account that in the head-to-head, the Packers showed what they were able to do defensively against that offense that's been humming again. The Bills have been the most dominant of the crew. And obviously, I don't know how the Ravens are plus 1,000 in Super Bowl odds. They have an opportunity to go to 1-4
against the Texans.
Against
and no
the Texans.
Lamar Jackson.
Which again, they could win that game, but they're also on a backup quarterback, and their defense has been horrendous.
Horrendous.
They're losing players. They can't stop the run. And they're just not a good defense, and it's not your Baltimore Ravens defense. It hasn't been the same since, I believe, our former teammate's brother, Chris Orr's brother, took over the defensive coordinating position. So I guess for me, I still think that through three games, the defense against the Lions, the Commanders, and the Browns, because let's not forget that Jordan Love put the Packers defense in a situation where it was unfair.
Correct.
They're still a good to great. I'd even say I still think they're a great defense.
I think they're great.
I really do think they're a great defense. And I know that's hard to hear after you're watching them give up, and I will say it correctly, 38 points. Because of Rich Bisaccia.
And also,
40.
Let's be clear. Right now, Dak Prescott is the best quarterback in the NFL.
He's played phenomenal. We talked about this on this program.
He's played better than anyone else. And I think, if we're being honest, I think Jeff Hafley's great. I think he's going to end up being a head coach next season. He didn't have his best game. The approach on defense was clearly different. They were playing back. They were afraid of getting beat deep. And in the previous 3 weeks, the corners were all over the place and all over every route, and that was just plainly different. I also think the difference we saw is despite Micah Parsons winning a ton,
Nobody else won.
Dak Prescott was getting the ball out super fast, and Rashawn Gary, Lucas Van Ness, and Kingsley Anagbare were no-shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you end up in a situation where your defense gives up 40 points.
Yeah, that's probably the scariest part. It's 1 week, but the scariest part was the guy that you brought in was still the highest-graded defensive player per Pro Football Focus, and he did not get any help from any guys, and that's something that we had a conversation about over the last 2 years prior to this year about, okay, these are the guys that we've had for a long time. We have a 13th overall rookie in a second year, the last 2 years, not getting it done. I saw Lucas Van Ness bull rush somebody all the way to the quarterback against the Lions. I know it's there. So 1 week I'm not going to hit the panic button, but there are things you can maybe put a microscope on and make sure they go back to the way that you remember them being successful as a team defense. I would also say it probably didn't help that from a kickoff standpoint. It's so hard as a defense in today's NFL when you're giving the team the ball at the 40 or they're returning it to the 37 or the 43, and that's two plays of chunk yards, and you're already on your heels.
Yeah, and we're not used to having an elite defense here in Green Bay. It's been a very long time. The elite defenses of years past, these games happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
They give up 40 points because, as Frank Winters famously said, hey, they get paid too. George Pickens had a great game. Their offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, the head coach, great game as well. Dak Prescott, great game. Sometimes you hit teams that have a really good game. And yes, I know CeeDee Lamb wasn't there. They were also missing some of their offensive line, and all those things factor in. But some days you just don't have it. I'm not going to downgrade them and say, oh, they don't have a good defense. It's not going to be good enough. It's not Super Bowl caliber. It absolutely is. They'll still be top 10 at the end of the season.
Yes.
They'll still take advantage. They'll still be the reason the Packers win plenty of games. But sometimes you have a bad day.
So, like, for instance here, against Joe Flacco, they couldn't move the football. Against Dak Prescott, a completely different quarterback, a capable quarterback, they did. Now, I'd be very concerned if Jake Browning, who, again, just looked absolutely horrendous against a very good Denver defense on Monday Night Football, if Jake Browning, who cannot move the football with the Cincinnati Bengals, does something out of the bye week to this defense, then my concern meter goes to a different level and we'll have a different conversation. So I do want to get to playoff baseball because it's in front of us and I can taste Saturday. I love even just seeing, even if somebody in our office that we work in is a fan of a different team, seeing what they're going through pitch by pitch. It's really something that I'm jealous of, but I'm not at the same time because I remember being at game three in the wild card and what that was like from an emotional roller coaster standpoint. So I'm jealous, but I'm not.
I'm not jealous of the remarkable stakes that are in a three-game series of, I mean, every pitch matters in the playoffs.
I'm jealous of being in the playoffs.
Yes.
I'm not jealous of the wild card.
It's stressful. Those games are tense. Everything is under a microscope. It's a lot of fun, but it's the most anxiety. And for Brewers fans recently, not into the future, but it's been sad.
It's been bad. The wild cards have been bad. They've been bad since 2018.
It's been bad to us. Yes.
They've been very bad. So we'll get into some playoff baseball here and look at the Milwaukee Brewers and what is ahead for them on the Weekly Wager live from Potawatomi Casino Hotel and their amazing sportsbook.
This is the Weekly Wager live from Potawatomi Sportsbook on 94.5 ESPN and at ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube. It started with a whisper, and now
it's when I kissed her, and then she met my lips. Hey, from Ben Russ Pretzel, it's the Weekly Wager.
Those 4 minute breaks with this pretzel go way too fast. And the pretzel is
delicious. All the food here is delicious.
Can I do one small Benism type thing?
Yes.
I went to my favorite deli spot today.
Okay.
And I got the half soup, half sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
It was split pea and ham. And I've never had split pea before.
That doesn't surprise me.
I, for some reason, thought, like, it was just, like, peas in the soup.
Like they were, like, floating.
Like, I don't mind peas. But the entire broth tasted like peas.
Yes.
So, it was too pea heavy for me. I couldn't eat it. I was like, this whole thing tastes like peas. Like, I wanted to eat the peas. I didn't want to have pea-flavored soup, but I guess if you're going to name a soup split pea and ham, it's probably going to feature a lot of pea flavor.
The important thing is, I think the split pea is to denote that the peas are being split up and, like, emulsified in a
way. I'm so glad you're here.
Uh-huh.
That's Josh DiMaggio. I'm Ben Bruss. This is the Weekly Wager.
Talking soup and peas.
Talking soup and peas. It's heading into soup season, so the more you know, if you didn't know that, you know now. The Milwaukee Brewers are awaiting the results. It will make sense, I swear, because if you don't know, we're waiting the results of the Yankees-Red Sox. If the Yankees, who are down 1-0, tied 2-2 currently live in the game, win the series, the Milwaukee Brewers will play at 1 o'clock.
Yep.
If the Red Sox win the series, the Milwaukee Brewers will play at 8 o'clock on Saturday.
Can I just be, and I try and be this because I think Wisconsin sports fans have a tendency to be woe is me about the big markets and everything and how we don't get the respect we deserve, which I think is accurate in many phases. The Milwaukee Brewers are a shining example of that. Best team basically throughout the last 4 months of the season, 3 months of the season, and they're hardly really talked about. Having the game time for the game decided on either the Yankees or the Red Sox makes me feel a type of way.
Yeah. I agree. It's like you're the best team in baseball.
Right.
The Phillies know they're playing at 6 or 6:36.
Right. We make the rules. We won.
Yeah, like
we had the best record in baseball.
Like for once. You know,
right.
it's not like this is the wild card.
Right.
This is like the next step of the playoffs where the best team in baseball should be a primary focus.
Correct. That's my petty gripe.
Waiting on Boston and New York.
La-la.
Yeah, as if New York had a good showing over the weekend. You know what I'm saying? As if Boston's a perfect city. You know what I'm saying?
I just hate it.
So that being said, World Series odds.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm quite interested in those yet. National League odds. Those are the ones that are most important to me. The Dodgers to win the National League plus 200, the Phillies plus 225, and the Brewers are at 325. Followed behind them are the Cubs, who are heading into a Game 3, which is great news for Brewers fans, yeah, because regardless of the outcome, the Padres or the Cubs will have played a three-game series, only giving their team one day of rest. And with the way playoff baseball is, you see Imanaga not go as far. Boyd did not go super far. I think he went through five, and he pitched well. Mm-hmm. And it might have been even four, but I know Council went early into his bullpen. And those are things that can help the Brewers on rest as they're trying to get a couple of arms back. But also, I think over 162 games, the way this team plays, a mental break was huge for them. I really yep. do. With the style of play that they have, they attack the strike zone. They hit a ton of singles. They play opportunistic baseball on the base pads. So I think it's great. Now, that being said, I am less scared about the Cubs or the Padres. And it's obvious, but at the end of the day, this is why you get rewarded with the one seed mm-hmm. and have the opportunity to get by the teams that are lesser, and the odds reflect that. You're not catching like one of the hottest teams in the Padres or the Cubs. Like, that's just not the case.
Right.
You're catching teams that are beatable. But I'm scared as hell of the Dodgers and the Phillies in a seven-game yeah. series. I really am. From when this team struggled the most in the Brewers, it felt as if they don't have a pitcher, or two pitchers for that matter, that can go eight innings.
Right.
It's just not part of how they played.
We saw Garrett Crochet and Skubal
do that.
Yes.
And for the Red Sox today, that pays dividends today in this game against the Yankees, because some of their best back-end relievers were not used because Chapman went an inning in the third when Crochet yep. was taken out after 8 2/3 or yes. 7 2/3. So that's where I struggle with, like, I'm not scared of the DS, I'm scared of the CS. And that's just me being vulnerable and honest.
Yeah, I did a segment on Mr. Irrelevant on Monday that I called, I believe I called it Visions from a Polluted Mindset Brewers Fan Edition, because I'm getting the willies.
That's a long name.
I'm getting the willies here about the Milwaukee Brewers. I understand they were the best team in baseball. They had the most wins. They were close to a 500, if not a 500 team in the last month in September. And that thing,
you can say they played 500 baseball. They weren't great in runners in scoring
right.
position.
That sort of thing happens. It's a baseball season. We always talk about it. It's a long season. You'll have your ups. You'll have your downs. There is, and I know we're getting to skip that wild card round. Massive. But I just have fears with the lack of pitching depth with Brandon Woodruff.
Are you on the DS right now still? Like, are you first round? Because I'm reading here, I'm getting a little nervous about the Brewers and the DS.
Yeah.
In our email. So I need you to be honest with me, because I said I'm not worried about the DS, and are you coming at me?
I'm not coming at you. I'm just telling you, I'm allowing the past to affect me in a way it probably shouldn't, in a way the Brewers proved they were better than. But just the way things are going with the surprise injury at the end of the season to another player, to another really important player in Brandon Woodruff, I'm starting to get the willies. I'm going to be rooting for the Brewers. I'm still going to have belief. I'm not going to see them drop one game and be like, I'm out on this. But I'm starting to get a little bit worried. And that's me also being vulnerable and honest. And I think you can, in the DS, you only need three pitchers. Because of the amount of rest that happens.
The rest in the five games.
Correct.
Completely agree.
But it is still not where we want it to be. Trevor McGill is going to, I imagine, be thrust right back into high leverage situations, because he's a guy who, until he had the injury and went onto the IL, was a guy that they proved to everyone that he should be trusted.
Correct.
But the inactivity from him, the struggling of the bats, the lack of Brandon Woodruff being that solidifying force.
The loss of what was the Miz.
Right, correct. That's another huge factor. Because at this point,
and when I say that he's alive, he's who knows if he's going to be on the playoff roster. And if he is, I'm scared to death anytime he's going to go out there. Because the biggest problem that he has, that he accomplished very early on when he got called up, was, for the most part, he had pretty good command.
Yep.
But when you see him on a Saturday night, with two games to go in the season, come in out of the bullpen, you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Yes.
Yuck. Right. And that's a regular season game.
Right.
Where it didn't matter, really.
There's no situation right now that matters in playoff baseball where you would trust the Miz. And that type of pitcher, the guy we saw to start his MLB career, and by no means am I out on him long term.
No,
I think he's going to be.
He's pitched more innings this year than he's pitched in his entire
career. I think he's
going
to be a fantastic option the Brewers have for a long time. I think he's going to continue to be in Cy Young conversations as he continues to grow into the pitcher he is. These are the type of things that happen. He's a young guy.
Corbin Burns was like in the bullpen.
Right.
And obviously we know what he became for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Correct.
And that was in 2018.
I just seen the World Series numbers, seeing that the Brewers are behind two other teams in the to win the NL is just giving me bad vibes. And I don't mean to disrespect the wonderful bookmakers here, but they get stuff wrong too. And that could mean nothing to us, and it might be a great opportunity for us to get the Brewers at +325, and they're going to go out there and prove because of the way Pat Murphy manages and the way they play disciplined baseball, the way they get every inch out of every at-bat, out of every base-running opportunity. Maybe that stuff all ends up mattering, and I think the playoffs are more conducive to that. I think things pressure gets heightened, and individual plays end up mattering a lot more in the playoffs because everyone has such quick hooks. You have to be able to sort of squeeze every inch and every advantage out as you can. And the Brewers are the best team to do that.
And let me give you some confidence here. You're in the bottom of the fifth inning. Boston's got a reliever on. Aaron Judge hits a soft liner with two outs to the left fielder. I think it's Duran. Completely just botches. Uh-huh. An inning ender.
Off his glove, too.
Who's more who takes advantage of that more than anybody in baseball?
The Brewers.
It's the Brewers.
And they don't make those errors in the inverse. They're
correct.
Not the ones making the defensive undisciplined plays.
Yeah, that's usually the Yankees last year.
I mean, Aaron Judge had one just yesterday.
Again!
What are you doing, bro?
Is this spring training, or do I got to go get the ball and throw it in? So, again, a good open and honest conversation about those Milwaukee Brewers. I'd like to take a look at the lines for especially the Cubs and the Padres. We can focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
But also some Thursday night action tomorrow before we get to our pick. So we'll do that. We'll do a little mixed bag here of Cubs-Padres. I know Jameson Taillon is starting. I haven't looked at for the Padres. I don't think you, Darvish, will. But we'll see. I will take a look. We'll get those odds. We'll get the lines. And we will also go through Thursday Night Football next.
You're listening to the Weekly Wager live from Pottawatomie Sportsbook on 94.5 ESPN and at ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube.
But I'm thinking it's time for a change. Get out of your lane.
Ben Bros, Josh DiMaggio with you from Pottawatomie Casino Hotel's amazing sportsbook. This is the Weekly Wager. Chris Larson's running the show. Still got a TBD on game time, but the Padres and the Cubs will face off at Wrigley Field. The winner will take on your Milwaukee Brewers. Jameson Taillon, Yu Darvish are your starters, and I don't expect to see them both go very far, which would be great for the Milwaukee Brewers. Mason Miller struck out the side today, the closer for the Padres. I don't think he closed, but my point is he had 104.5 mile per hour pitch. He is an absolute wagon that they brought in at the trade deadline from the Athletics. I'd rather play the Cubs from a baseball standpoint, but I don't want to play the Cubs. I don't. I can't live in a world where the Cubs would potentially end the Brewers season with Craig Counsell as the guy managing the team.
Yeah, that's a really tough thing to sort of stomach, the idea of... I don't think Cubs fans or Brewers fans would really relish that matchup just because what the potential of losing would look like and feel like and you would have to deal with heading into next season. If we're being strictly honest about the game, I do think Yu Darvish is the better pitcher and better to be used in the postseason.
He's got better stuff.
Yeah. Jameson is sort of a journeyman, sort of a guy that has had his ups and downs, has had great seasons, and is capable of great games. But I think if we get the Yu Darvish, that's the side I want to lean on. And yes, I'm using a little bit of my Homers Brewers fans in that, because I'd probably rather see the Padres. And that might be bad matchup-wise for the Brewers, but I don't think there's a clear advantage to facing either one of them for the Brewers. I don't think it's, like, if it were a difference
I guess I'm more scared of the Padres pitching than I am yes. the Cubs pitching.
If it was between, say, the Dodgers or the Cubs, I'm rooting for the Cubs. If it was Phillies, like, there's some clear differences here. But either one of these teams, the Brewers are better than. They should have the opportunity to beat. And I'm going to root for, I suppose, in this occasion. And if you're asking me to put my money on it, I'm going to go Padres.
Well, we can move quickly here to Thursday Night Football, because you got a doozy coming of the Rams minus 7.5 at home against the hospitalized 49ers right now. Brock Purdy ruled out. Ricky Pearsall ruled out. Juwan Jennings ruled out. Josh, do you want to list off the studs that the 49ers are rolling out?
You did leave out one thing. He's been out for a while and he is on IR. That is George Kittle as
Kittle,
well.
Of course, yes.
So the starting pass-catching positions for your 49ers this week are Kendrick Bourne, DeMarcus Robinson, Jake Tongas, Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
Hey!
Sky Moore.
Hey!
And Russell Gage.
Yuck. Yuck, yuck, yuck. Somehow Christian McCaffrey is alive and well for that team. I know we're going to get into the spread a little bit later in our program. Is there anything that stands out to you as an opportunity? Because for me, it is fading Mac Jones over and unders. Like, he's not going to throw for 216 yards. I'm looking at that. There's no way.
So the simulations and the nerdy people who do all the work will tell you it's usually probably smarter to bet on the bad guys to have better than expected games. I think we've reached a portion of critical mass here and players missing. I do think they'll have some success, but I also think the Rams defense is very good.
They're really good in
all the NFL. And it is McCorkle Jones who is going to be the quarterback. So I think Kyle Shanahan's going to scheme them up as well as possible. He's going to put them in advantageous spots. They're going to rely on Christian McCaffrey heavily.
If they're in pass situations, it's over.
Right.
I mean, the pass rush from the Rams is too good.
When I first initially thought, hey, we could get sneaky, and I do love any of the receptions or receiving yards numbers you can get for Kendrick Bourne. He's been getting a lot of opportunity this far of the season, and he got signed very late, maybe actually after week one.
Yeah, it was after week one. He sat out week one to look at his options.
Yeah, and I believe he has games with like 6 or 7 targets in them. To me, that's an opportunity to... It is still the NFL. It'll be ugly. You'll probably be hanging on to your butt. But the over for him on receiving yards is something I would be looking for.
39.5 right here for Kendrick Bourne at Pottawatomie's Sportsbook.
I mean, that doesn't seem that hard to accomplish for him.
And it goes McCaffrey from a receiving standpoint over 55.5. Your running back is leading your wide receivers in your prop bets for the San Francisco 49ers.
And I don't hate that number for Christian McCaffrey, even as high as it is, because where else is the ball going to go? I do think if you want to also look at... his name's escaping me now.
Jake Tongas?
No. The other... DeMarcus Robinson. Like, those guys are at least experienced NFL players. They're
DeMarcus Robinson isn't even on the board here at Pottawatomie Casino Hotel.
You could have some fun and maybe put a touchdown bet on those guys. I thought I was going to be sneaky and get a Kendrick Bourne touchdown, but that's only plus 260. It is still an advantage, and I do think they end up scoring in this game. I just think it's going to be pretty ugly. I would, if you want to like look at defense, like you could try and find sack numbers, maybe look at like Jared Verse and see what happens there, or interceptions for Mac Jones. Those are all things. The other one I would say is Mac Jones rushing yards. Not that he's particularly fleet of foot, but I imagine he's probably going to have to Jordan run. He's going to be in a lot of those situations.
Run, Mac, run.
Yes.
I can't. That's the difference. He can't move. Jordan Love at least can move.
Yes.
I'm not able to find any rushing here, as I think it would be 0.5, and they are probably protecting themselves here at Pottawatomie Sportsbook, which makes sense. Player rushing and receiving, Christian McCaffrey, over 122.5 is his line.
I'm having a hard time with that number. I did say the passing total is probably something worth looking at, but there's a situation, and I don't think it's too slim of an outcome, where this game gets so out of hand for them, they just look and say, hey, this isn't our week. We need to get healthy. Let's not lose you. Right. Let's not run the guy who has had injury problems in the past and we need, if we're going to make the playoffs, to be here. So, like, yes, if it's a close game, I suppose there's a chance he has 30-plus touches. And at that number, you're looking at it and going, great. But I also think there's a chance he has, like, 17. And
Brian Robinson Jr., you're up.
Right, good luck, buddy.
Yeah, have fun with that front seven. What we're going to go to next, and I'm going to read verbatim here, segment four, picks. Josh last week, 1-4.
Uh-huh.
Ouch. Ben last week, 2-3. Josh overall, 4-10 against the spread. Ben, 7-7, sitting at 500.
Did I add a yuck to the end of my overall record?
No, but we can do it now. Josh, 4-10, yuck.
Yeah.
We'll hit Thursday Night Football, we'll hit the Sunday Europe game, the Texans-Ravens at noon. We got a Sunday night game featuring the Buffalo Bills, one of the best teams of football, and an intriguing Monday night game that I'm struggling to figure out which way I want to go.
I usually hate Packers bye week because I just want to see more. I'm so upset with what took place on Sunday. I think me and the Packers need a break.
All right. Joshy DiMaggio and the Packers are taking a break. We'll see who reaches out to who first. And we go to our picks next.
This is the Weekly Wager live from Pottawatomie Sportsbook on 94.5 ESPN and at ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube. I fell for the devil's daughter. I jumped in, yeah, I drank the water.
Let's jump right into it right here on the Weekly Wager. As I mentioned, if you weren't with us, Josh is 4-10 overall against the spread. Yuck. Ben is 7-7. I don't know what I said. Ben, I am. Ben Brust.
Isn't it crazy? You only was it four games better than me, but it feels like a million. Miles.
Feels like a million.
Yeah. And that's just how this goes. I would like to say I promise to get better. I don't know if I can promise that. It's been a rough set. This has been one of my, like, in recent memory, worst. Like,
the tides will turn, Joshy.
They turn, and they could turn the opposite way all in one week. I had last season so many great weeks. I was on top of
I was hearing a lot of Josh DiMaggio wins last week. He hasn't come knocking over last and be like, hey, check this one out.
Yeah.
The Niners are now plus 7.5 per Pottawatomie Sportsbook at the Los Angeles Rams Thursday.
Yeah, we just talked about in the previous segment, Nick Bosa, George Kittle, Brock Purdy, Ricky Pearsall, Juwan Jennings all out. This is an all-time, don't overthink it. Don't let yourself try and get cute. You take the Rams minus the 7.5, and you say, hey, maybe they give up. There's not a lot of analysis here. I actually think the Rams are a sneaky, like, that next-tier team that could actually end up in a Super Bowl. With how good their defense is, Davante Adams and Puka Nacua all playing as well as they are.
They're using Kyren and Blake Corum now. And not to say Kyren's been bad. It's just, like, they've been rotating a little bit more. We can go to the next one. I can't on a Thursday night trust Mac Jones and the crew that they're rolling out there. So we both are on the Rams minus 7.5. The Vikings minus 3.5 versus the Cleveland Browns in Europe.
Yeah, this one's interesting to me. And What I'm afraid of is I'm making a mistake here, even thinking about the Browns, because the Vikings have spent they played last week in Europe, and they stayed in Europe. They just changed countries, and they have the advantage of being acclimatized to the time change and all of that. But Minnesota's starting Carson Wentz. Browns are starting Dylan Gabriel. The Browns, great defense. We've seen it. They can get pressure. But also, the Vikings know how to get pressure and know how to give you a tough time. I'm going with the Browns +3.5. I hate it. I despise it. But it's two quarterbacks you don't have much belief in. I don't know. If you have a lot of conviction about this game, I think you have a problem.
Well, I guess I got a problem because I'm pretty convinced I'm going with the Vikings -3.5. One of my theories, which played out to work, not the way that I thought it would, but it paid out in the fourth quarter and in the second half when the Vikings adjusted. You're telling me that Brian Flores gets Dylan Gabriel fresh. That's a tough first game. I don't care where it is. And as you mentioned, they have the advantage of being there. Give me the Vikings -3.5. Carson Wentz is not a god by any means.
No.
But he's serviceable. And all they need to do is be serviceable. And they have enough passing weapons where, you know, the front seven is scary. But I got to trust the Vikings here -3.5 that the defense will just eat Dylan Gabriel alive.
The thing that's making it hard for me is I think the Browns' defense is markedly better than the Vikings. I also, Carson Wentz had 2 interceptions and was sacked 6 times in his previous. So they're susceptible. I just have a hard time believing in the Browns' offense. I think Quinshon Judkins is pretty good.
He is good.
And can be a real advantage for them to sort of give Dylan Gabriel a safety blanket, but all the things you said, I agree with.
I know. Look, I thought about it too, but then I was like, don't overthink it, Ben.
And I might be overthinking it, and that might be my problem this year. Because
we'll see. We'll see how this week goes, and if it goes bad, we'll just say stop overthinking.
Last year, one of my main convictions was I'm going to bet on the Chiefs, and I stopped doing that last week, and look what happened to me.
Yeah, and I did it. Let's go to the Texans -1 at the Baltimore Ravens, a 1-3 Baltimore Ravens that are going to be Lamar Jacksonless.
I know I'm the one that picked this, but I hate this game.
Why'd you do this?
Just because it is at least like intriguing in terms of a team that's really struggling that we all think
desperate.
Is going to be. Yes, they don't have their starting quarterback. We are going to who's their backup? Cooper Rush is going to be there. I love the under in this game. This is a big under game to me. I think it's as low as like
Josh,
20 sec.
We're talking about -1 here.
Ravens +1.5.
I'm going to go with the Texans -1. Wow, we're opposite on 2 so far.
Yeah, oppo.
New England Patriots +7.5 at the Buffalo Bills Sunday Night Football.
I like the Patriots +8.5. I think the Patriots are good and getting better. I really like Drake May. I think the Bills have been the best team in the NFL. But I do think that the Patriots are going to be able to hang around in this game. And I think that they have enough talent on offense to keep them close with the Bills.
I hate this one more than any of the others. I like Drake May too.
Uh-huh.
But going into Buffalo on Sunday night is a tough feat for a Patriots team.
I'm hoping for...
I think they've been impressive, but like, yes. I don't think they've been challenged necessarily.
I'm hoping for an AFC East classic slop fest.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Bills here. I know Christian Gonzalez is back for the Patriots, but it's not like they go to one target all game and they're so reliant upon that. So I'm going to go with the Bills -7.5 here. And to wrap it up, Chiefs -3.5 at the Jacksonville Jaguars Monday night. Joshy,
simple take I have here. I'm not making the same mistake again. I'm going Chiefs -3.5. I think the Chiefs also looked away on offense. I haven't seen them look in what better part of 2 years at this point. Xavier Worthy can't lift his arm above his shoulder and was contributing in a massive way. I think we're all systems go for the offense and the Chiefs. I like the Chiefs -3.5. You're on the other side?
I'm on the Jags.
No!
We're only the same on the Rams. The rest were split.
This is great records, opportunity
these
for
records
me.
Are going to be very different come next week. We're going to have MLB baseball. Dodgers, Reds. That's at 7:30 for the weekly wager, and everyone at Pottawatomie Casino Hotel, who we love, like Haley, thank you for all your service. You're the best.
So awkward.
That's what I do best. See ya.
Bye.